ever since the Arab oil embargo all the way back in the mid-70s, strongly held policy and goal for America has been less reliance on energy imports and a greater domestic energy independence. Even the Obama administration has stated that goal as one of their top priorities. However, their actions cause questions to come up about their words. While one green energy boondoggle after another follows federal funding with bankruptcy, traditional energy production, private most often than not, gets overregulated, and as is the case with the Keystone XL pipeline, even blocked. Here to talk about the reasons for this, along with the situations that these policies are creating, is a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Marlo Lewis. Good morning, Marlo.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the program.
Good to have you here. Help us make sense of some of this stuff, which is tough to do when it comes to energy and liberals in Washington. Nevertheless, CEI.org is the website for Competitive Enterprise Institute and a subsidiary website you can check out too, globalwarming.org. So let's get into that. For just superficially, if energy independence is the key, why do the Solyndras get the blessings and the Keystone Pipeline gets the naming?
Well, because for the Obama administration, it's not about American energy production. That's not really what they're after. They're really joined at the hip to the environmental movement, which detests fossil fuels. There's this irrational hatred of fossil fuels, particularly oil companies. Those seem to be the villains in their little morality tale that they like to understand all of their political actions in terms of, with them wearing the white hats and the big bad oil companies wearing the black hats, and they know that this pipeline will increase the economic efficiency of North American oil related energy infrastructure, and so that's why they're against it. And what they hope is that they can not only block this pipeline, but they can block with their allies in Canada and also working in Canada. They can block similar pipelines that would take the oil from Alberta, which is the main oil-producing province, to Canada's east and west coasts. And so the underlying theory that they're operating with is that oil companies won't produce what they can't sell. So if we can just stop them from finding willing buyers in the marketplace, we can put them out of business. And of course, you know, if all oil companies were to go out of business, the global economy would crash and we'd all starve. And guess what else would suffer in the process? The environment, because it actually takes wealth to protect the environment. Environmental protection is a very expensive proposition, and you can only do it in an advanced industrial economy. And the advanced industrial economy of the world runs on oil, among other fossil fuels, primarily.
Well, here's the dirty little secret the environmentalists are sort of either hiding or ignoring or ignorant of. If the pipeline, and it obviously passed Congress, and there'll be the third veto of Obama's two terms in office when he puts that pen to paper, but nevertheless, if the pipeline is squelched and continues to be prohibited and prevented, there is an alternative means to transport that oil that's produced, that's through the roads and through the rails. Strange thing about that is that leaves a bigger carbon footprint and puts the environment at, albeit a minor, but still a greater risk than piping it through.
Yes. This is one of the delicious ironies of this whole debate, is the State Department is the agency tasked with doing the environmental impact analysis, and the State Department has repeatedly concluded, including in its final report, which was called the Final Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement, that if you block the Keystone Pipeline, the oil will still reach U.S. refineries. It'll just come on barges and trains and smaller incremental pipelines, all of which will require more energy to operate than the Keystone Pipeline, as a result of which the oil per barrel that reaches U.S. refiners will emit 28% to 42% more greenhouse gases. So if they were really concerned more than anything else about reducing greenhouse gas emissions, they would all be rallying in favor of the Keystone XL pipeline.
Because that way, too, when they fly their private jets and ride their limos at all these global warming symposiums, they'll be able to balance out the carbon footprints that way.
That's right. In other words, and if they really thought that every incremental ton of carbon dioxide was some kind of sin against nature, yes, then they'd all go to these climate conferences in rowboats or sailboats, and they'd all walk or bicycle to these conferences. And I mean, these conferences are carbon dioxide emission extravaganzas. And but of course, they have important work to do. See, if the, in their thinking, if you have really important work to do like they have, then it's okay to have a big carbon footprint. It's only the rest of us little people that really need to tighten our belts and use less energy.
With Marlo Lewis, who is a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org on the web, as well as globalwarming.org, to get some specific information, knowledge, and statistics about the myth and the fantasies of global warming. Of course, we have those links over to our website as well. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. The whole idea as well with the oil production, when it comes to the price of the retail price of gas, the environmentalists were cheering the fact that here for in New Jersey, for example, price of a gallon of gas dipped to about $1.79, and they were saying, "See, it's too expensive to not only do the heavy oil production, but the fracking as well." Fortunately, if you blink, you miss that $1.79 price, because now it's ready to cross $2 again over here in New Jersey. But is the price, if the price stays low, sub like $50-$75 a barrel, does that become production prohibitive for oil production, such as what is happening up in Alberta, what's happening in the Dakotas?
You know, I really don't know that, and I think only the market will be able to sort that out. The company that's proposing to build the pipeline, TransCanada, pointed out that oil was below $75 a barrel for most of 2009, and yet that was a period when both the fracked oil in the Bakken region in the United States and the oil sands oil in Canada started to really take off, started to really boom. What they're arguing is that oil prices are volatile. Sometimes they're high, sometimes they're low, and they've been both high and low in the last 10 years. Mostly high, but there have been low points, and yet oil production has an investment in oil production has gone up. Now, it's true that there are a lot of marginal wells that are being shut down in this period of low oil prices. But the thing is, every business knows that it takes risks when it invests its capital. And from all reports that I have seen and all the evidence that I have seen, TransCanada, the company that wants to build a pipeline, still thinks that this is a money-making proposition for TransCanada, and that would only be the case if there were refineries that still wanted to pay to have the oil come down through the pipeline rather than through rail. So, you know, if it turns out that this is a bad investment now because oil prices are so low, then this pipeline won't get built very likely. So you don't need the government to step in and prevent people from taking risks with their own capital. And if they think it's still a reasonable proposition to invest their capital for a long-term payoff, they probably understand this better than environmental groups who are sniping at them from the sidelines.
And they continue to cheer on the concept of ethanol, solar panels, and wind turbines, which solar panels just on their own, they sort of gloss over the fact of the production of and the eventual disposal of will create a toxic hazard when those days come about, too. Much like with the pigtail light bulbs, as they're affectionately called. But that's another talk for another time. But to get the reality of the situation, find out the facts versus the hype regarding not just the Keystone XL pipeline, but a lot of the claims made about the fossil fuel energy and domestic energy independence ideas, which are working. Again, I referenced the Dakotas for not just the economy, but for the job growth and the energy production happening there from the fracking that's gone on. Check out globalwarming.org and learn more about this and other issues. gain some insight as well in education from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Their website is CEI.org. He's a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Marlo Lewis. Marlo, thanks for giving us a little clearer view of all this shaking out. Thanks for being here this morning.
Okay, thanks so much.